sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Dr. Doron Markel of the Israeli Water Authority, an expert on the Sea of Galilee and water issues in Israel and the Middle East. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shin Shinim, Bar El Kachar, and Leah Avuno, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It may not officially be summer until June 20th or so, but here in southern Arizona, where I live, summer has been here for a while, and it's hot, dry, and not so fun. But there are always options to take advantage of when things get this hot, like going away to summer camp, especially a Jewish summer camp. And so, since it's that time of year, it must also be time to play the immortal, eternally entertaining cut from the late, great comedian Alan Sherman about kids going off to camp. Here it is, an annual summer tradition on Two Jewish for the past nearly 15 years, believe it or not. The classic tune, Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Hello Mudda, Hello Fada. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters, and the lake has alligators, and the head coach wants no sissies, so he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy? They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh Mudda Fada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay, I've been here one whole day. Dearest Fada, darling Mudda, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball, gee, that's better. Mudda Fada, kindly disregard this letter.
A truly legendary piece of American Jewish music that was Alan Sherman's Hello Mudda, Hello Fada. It is, of course, very funny and human and appropriate for this time of year, with kids going away to what used to be called sleepaway camp and parents enjoying life again. Missing their lovely, sweet children every moment they are gone. Look, the truth is, with the cost of overnight camps these days, parents may find themselves missing their financial solvency when kids go to camp. Having had children at Jewish camps for, a dozen years or so, I can tell you that I'm only exaggerating a little bit. It isn't really that expensive. I just had to sell the family pets to pay for it the last time, and I've been eating top ramen for the last couple of years, but it's worth it, even with what it costs to send kids to camp. The truth is, it's worth it because when kids attend a Jewish camp, they come back with an extraordinarily natural feeling about what it's like to live Jewishly every single day, without a thought of protesting or criticizing or complaining about the experience. At camp, being Jewish is cool, completely cool, the way it should seem in everyday life and at temple, but often doesn't. If we could introduce all of our children to the total Jewish environment that camp is and make it a regular part of their lives, we would make enormous progress towards ensuring the future of the American Jewish community for the next generation and many generations to come. It's also true that when we are able to replicate that kind of dedicated, embracing Jewish experience for families and adults and seniors in our Jewish homes and in our temples, we also begin to create the kind of future for Judaism that's essential to our continued flourishing in this remarkable country. For Judaism wasn't made to be experienced only in tiny bits and just in the synagogue on Friday night or Sunday morning. Judaism, a way of life, my grandfather, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan, called it in his book of that same title. And as a way of life, it is meant to include experiences and insights into every area of human endeavor. When our synagogue holds a temple retreat annually, or an Israel pilgrimage trip like we're going to do next June, or an extended study session or a class like Adult B'nai Mitzvah or Adult Confirmation, we are also trying to create the best aspects of that Jewish camp experience in a way, but for grown-ups. Because it's when we make Judaism part of every aspect of our lives that we gain the greatest sense of the goodness, holiness, meaning, and serenity that Judaism gives. So do send your kids or grandchildren or great-grandchildren to Jewish camp. But take some time to include Jewish rituals, study, prayer, and play in your own life every day, too. If you can do that, the rest of the year will be just as much fun as camp and just as enjoyable for Jewish kids. By the way, at our own Temple Emmanuel, we have our Chardonnay Shabbat, 5 o'clock wine, cheese, and fruit on Fridays, 5:45 one-hour service. Great way to enjoy this beautiful time of, okay, this really hot time of year. Our guest this morning, Dr. Doron Markle of the Israel Water Authority, will be at Temple Emmanuel this coming Friday night for that Chardonnay Shabbat. He's an expert on the beautiful, endangered Sea of Galilee, the Kinneret, and on water issues in Israel and the Middle East generally. Find out what's going on with the Kinneret, with the wonderful Sea of Galilee, right now when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guests this morning. Dr. Doron Markle is with Israel's Water Authority. He's an expert on the Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee, the central water resource for Israel, and an expert on Middle East water in general. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning.
So what's the real situation with the Sea of Galilee now? In my experience, sometimes the water's been very high, sometimes very low. It's above a red line, it's below a red line, it's a crisis, it's full.
Yeah, well, the current situation is not good. The water level is below the red line, below the lower red line, and it's just the beginning of the summer, so it will continue to decrease and reach a water level of 1.2, 1.3 meters below the lower red line, and the situation, the water quality has also some problems like salinity and blooms of cyanobacteria. So yeah, the current situation is not good.
So it's really kind of a crisis. Now, why do I recall hearing last summer when there were lots of rains that suddenly the Sea of Galilee was in good shape and it wasn't in drought? Was that just a misunderstanding in the media?
Probably. Look, the situation here is sort of a climate change, and the last 4 years, the last successive 4 years were very weak winter years with not a lot of rain and natural precipitation, and the inflow to Lake Kinneret decreased dramatically in the last 4 years. So 2013 was the last good year, and since then 2014, 15, 16 and 17 were all bad years. So the water level drop and water quality deteriorated.
So very serious situation. Is this a crisis?
The water situation in Israel is good since we have the desalination plants. Probably you've heard that Israel constructed 5 desalination plants on the shore of the Mediterranean Sea, producing almost 600 million cubic meters per year. That's a lot. That's 80% of the potable consumption in Israel. However, in the north of Israel, we've got less natural rain, and there is no connection so far between the desalination plants and the Sea of Galilee. Therefore, the Sea of Galilee, which used to be one of the main water resources and used to produce and discharge hundreds of millions of cubic meters per year to the central and southern Israel, nowadays it is not producing almost nothing to the national water carrier. And the other way around, it needs to get water.
It has to be recharged. Fascinating turn of events, and we will talk much more with Doron Markle of Israel's Water Authority on the situation in the Sea of Galilee and in Israel in general when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail, or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America. There's a newish movie in theaters these days called Norman, starring Richard Gere as a small-time New York Jewish fixer who manages to get himself into the middle of things well beyond his capacity to handle them. The filmmaker is Joseph Seder, the Israeli-American director who made the extraordinary movie Footnote 5 or 6 years ago and the powerful Beaufort before that. This is a very Jewish and very Israeli movie. It's touching, sad, complex, and funny all at once, brilliantly acted throughout. And Norman has director Seder's elegant, original, sardonic, very human touch all over it. Don't miss it. Also, last week we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Six-Day War and the reunification of Jerusalem, at least on the American calendar. We've been talking about that on Too Jewish for a month or so. Anyway, it was June 7th, 1967 that the eternal capital of the Jewish people was liberated and returned to us after a fierce battle with Jordanian soldiers. Remembering that moment half a century ago last week, here's Ofra Chaza singing Naomi Shemer's classic Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, Jerusalem of gold. Avir harim tzalu lekayayim v'reach oranim nisa beruach arbaim im kol pamonim.
ושל נחושת ושל אור הלא
That was the extraordinary Ofra Chaza singing Jerusalem of Gold for the 50th anniversary of the reunification of Jerusalem just last week. We welcome Tom Price, our expert on the international Jewish scene. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So Israel has been a country of immigrants from its beginning. There are Jews there from 200 countries, many of which don't even exist anymore. And yet, many Israeli workers now are actually imported from East Asia and other parts of the world to do jobs that Israeli Jews don't particularly want to do or don't feel like doing that used to be done perhaps by Palestinians before the various intifadas. And a lot of them come from like the Philippines. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, the creation of the wall has drastically reduced the number of Palestinians who come into Israel on a daily basis and work as day laborers, construction workers, or whatever. That labor force had to be replaced by something. And the Israeli government passed some laws that are very specific, often to specific countries or types of immigrants to do specific types of work. So if you go near the Tel Aviv bus station these days, you'll see lots of Africans and Southeast Asians and people from Sri Lanka and Thailand and the Philippines, whatever. But I mean, it's funny that you raised the example of the Philippines because the New York Times just ran a big piece in its weekly magazine about the Filipino community in Israel, which is overwhelmingly female and overwhelmingly engaged in home health care, often of very elderly people. So they pointed out something that only somebody who spent a lot of time in Israel would know, but many Israeli homes have a mitapelet, who's basically like a cleaning lady or maid who takes care of stuff. And the tapel means to take care of things in any different way, physical maintenance, cleaning, caring for a baby, whatever. So now apparently in Israel, and particularly in the big cities like Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, people, instead of saying my mitapelet, they say my Filipina, even if the person is from Thailand or someone
somewhere else.
The right. Filipinos have Malaysia. Such a good reputation, and they can get a visa that entitles them to stay for up to a certain number of years. And honestly, I don't remember if it's 5 or 7, but it's very hard to renew that visa unless the family intervenes. But if the person they're caring for dies, very often they have to go back. Now, one thing that happens sometimes is the Filipino woman meets some Israeli guy and falls in love and they get married. And if they get married by the rabbinate, she has to convert. And they have children who are Jewish and who see themselves as Israeli. They go to Israeli schools. And in fact, sometimes the mothers try to maintain the Catholic identity of their children. So there is a church in Tel Aviv for Filipinas that has one mass every day in Tagalog, the language of the Philippines, and one mass in Hebrew for the children of these Filipino women.
Wow.
So that they can participate in mass in Hebrew. It's got to be, you know, one of the rare times in the world that the mass is actually said in Hebrew. But this article, which I highly commend to your listeners, New York Times Weekly Magazine of sometime in early May. It was just fascinating about this growing community, which now numbers about 50,000 and is growing.
Yeah, not an insignificant number in a country of less than 8 million. So fascinating. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome Bar El Kacher, our Shin Shin on Israel this year, representing the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Bar.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Bar, you're coming to the latter stages of your time here, and you've had a very interesting experience. You lived in America earlier in a small college town, Blacksburg, Virginia, and then went back to Israel, and then came for this 1 year. Tell us some of your observations about the Jewish community here, your experience of it.
Yeah, so it was very interesting to come here in the beginning, because I had my past viewings on America and past viewings on being a Jewish person in America, and was extremely different, because from Blacksburg, Virginia, it was me, my brother, my sister, and then two other families, Israeli and Jewish, which made up the religious school.
Yeah, that's
that was
it, right?
Yeah, that was it. It was us. And if we didn't come, half the school wasn't there. So right. it was very different. And to come here into places like Temple Emmanuel and Anshe Israel, which are the big shuls here, and to see so many Jewish people learning about Israel, learning about their own Judaism, it's amazing to see. And I was kind of, the first time I came inside, I was thinking of my first experience in Blacksburg, and I said, whoa, this is a big change. This is much bigger, much more learning. And it looked like the people were really into it, and all the teachers, and they make the students enjoy
excited
it.
Yeah, and it was, to it, right.
I don't know, it was different than my experience, because I know that the size did matter there, but it was very nice to see it, that it's not only about, you know, looking at the numbers, it was also about getting interested in it.
Sure. Now, in Israel, of course, as we've reported many times, but I think for most Americans, it's still not clear. Most Israelis are, like your family, Chiloni. That
definitely,
is,
yeah.
They consider themselves secular, but you do Jewish stuff, and you have a lot of knowledge of Judaism. There's not really something like that. There's no analog here in America.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for me in Israel, I do Yom Kippur, and I do, sometimes I would do Shabbat, and it was mostly for my own reasons definitely for Yom Kippur would be the challenge for me. That was really interesting. But it was mostly because
for Pesach, you had a Seder.
Yeah, exactly. You do everything that has to do
Hanukkah,
with the holidays,
you light
and
candles, whatever,
everything,
right.
Everything has to do with it. And of course, the presence is not visible in Israel, the presence for Hanukkah, but that's a different story.
Presence in America, yeah. Thing. Okay, I accept that.
Yeah. But still, it was something, a really big part of my life, my whole childhood, basically. And it wasn't that I was the most religious person. I'm still not the most religious person now, but I've gained much more knowledge here this year, and understanding that in Israel, it is to be Masorti, to be conservative, is something else. It's to observe the holidays and to have a big religious part, maybe not in you, but inside of your knowledge, maybe not practicing it, but having it in your life. And I think here there's I think more diversity than in Israel, which is kind of weird.
Isn't that funny?
It is funny, yeah, because in Israel, most shuls are Orthodox and not a lot of conservative and reform. And it's really interesting to see in America, there's so many different people having different speeches and debates about how to be Jew and
what does it mean to be Jewish and how to be Jewish in society and contemporary. It's been great having you, and we look forward to continuing the conversation. Thanks so much, Bar.
Thank you so much.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov, Boker Or. Good morning.
Boker Or, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Baruch Haba. You've just come back from the Tucson Hebrew Academy trip to Israel.
Yes.
You get to take your eighth graders there.
Amazing trip.
So before we dig into some of the details, mm-hmm. What was the feeling in Israel? What's it like? It's always different every time I go. I'm sure it is for
you. Yeah. You know, Israel is a country on the move, and the sleeves are rolled up and people are working and busy and engaged. I personally felt more of a sense, I think, of calm on this trip. I was there last year as well. And of course, we go around in our bubble, in our bus with our guides and stuff. But it felt very, very comforting and engaging. And there's an interest and there's a welcome from the people who are excited to see you and want to learn about your world a little bit. And so it felt very positive, and it felt very safe there.
Isn't it interesting? You know, what you see on the news is not what you actually experience when you go to Israel.
Right.
The process of leading a group of American kids who almost none of them have been to Israel before, you know, that's always an interesting process.
Yeah.
Any new insights having just done that?
Well, it's a lot of work. I think people may have a perception that, oh, you're taking kids to Israel. That's going to be fun. And yeah, it's fun, but it's tough, hard work, physically, psychologically, mentally, and it's very rewarding at the same time. So actually a number of our kids have the privilege of going to Israel frequently, but of course the majority had never been and were there on their first time. So there was a lot of reminders of drinking water, wearing your hat, sunscreen, being ready.
Which you think kids from Arizona wouldn't need those reminders, frankly?
Oh, they do. Oh, they do. And they need all kinds of parenting and kind of guidance, but also that freedom to be themselves and to do their thing and to experience the trip on their own. So there's a balance.
What was your favorite moment from this trip?
You know, one of the highlights was on Masada. Basically, our second full day of the trip, we get up to the top of the Masada just in time for sunrise.
Now, did you guys walk up the snake path?
We walked up the ramp.
Oh, the ramp.
And
okay.
Then we took the snake path down.
Right.
But as we were on, literally on the eastern, you know, kind of cliff face, the eastern edge of the top, we prayed up there. And then after that, as we're kind of hanging out, Israeli Air Force C-130 did a flyby.
One of those big Hercules transports.
Yes. Mm. And it was, you know, it was part of their ceremony for graduating their current class. And the thing just sort of gracefully sort of flew and kind of, you know, tilted over to the side. And it was just amazing. It was right in front of us, 300 yards out. Boom. But also very powerful was Friday night at the wall, dancing and davening and the energy and the joy of Jews who are releasing their week and coming into the Sabbath of every nature, young, old, soldiers, ultra-Orthodox to non-Jewish even, and just that sense of community and that communal energy and vibe, just powerful.
Wonderful memories. We will talk next week. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Welcome back again.
Thanks.
When we come back on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Morris gets a new dog and can't wait to show him off to his friend Shlomo. So when Shlomo arrives, Morris calls the dog into the house, bragging about how smart the dog is. The dog runs up and stands looking up at his master, tail wagging, mouth open, tongue hanging out, eyes bright with anticipation. Morris points to the newspaper on the couch and commands, "Fetch!" Immediately, the dog climbs onto the couch and sits down. Tail stops wagging, the doggy smile disappears. Looking balefully up at his master, the dog says in a whiny voice, "You think this is easy, wagging my tail all the time? Ay vey, it hurts from the wagging. And that organic dog food, the expensive dreck you're feeding me? Ugh! You don't care about me anyway. You just shove me out the door to pee 3 times a day and that's it. I can't remember the last time you took me for a walk." Shlomo is amazed. He says, "What the heck? Your dog is sitting there talking and complaining." "Oh, I'm sorry," explains Morris. "He's still young. I'm training him. He thought I said kvetch, not fetch." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, we chant the dramatic portion of Shlach Lecha in the book of Numbers, the story of the Meraglim, the spies. The Israelites have journeyed to the borders of the Holy Land just a year and a half after leaving Egyptian exile. Under God's direction, Moses sends out 12 spies, one from every tribe, princes of the people, wealthy men of standing, into the land of Canaan to scout the land and see if it can be captured. The spies take a whole month and they see the land, and they report back to Moses the land is very good, flowing with milk and honey. They bring back a huge cluster of grapes, so large it must be carried by 2 men on a pole. That's now the enduring symbol of Israel's tourism ministry. Everything is going to be great. Only it's not. 10 of the 12 spies report that the people of the land are huge. We felt like grasshoppers next to them, they say, and numerous. The cities are fortified and unassailable. The Israelites have no shot, in spite of having God's support. Two of the spies, Caleb and Joshua, deliver a minority report saying that with God's help, the land can be taken, but the people are terrified. Again, they ask Moses and Aaron, "Why did you take us from slavery only to kill us here at the hands of our enemies?" It's at this point that the decision is made by God. This generation of former slaves will never be able to become a free people in its own land. The psychological shackles of slavery are too strong to overthrow in just one generation. And so, after a failed, leaderless attempt to invade the land without God's approval or Moses' presence, the people are condemned to wander the wilderness for 38 more years, a total of 40 since they left Egyptian slavery, until a new young generation will emerge to take the reins and enter the land with the mentality of freedom. It's a great lesson in the process required to cleanse trauma and failure from the minds of a community. Often it's not one single act or great revolution that remakes a people or a country. It's the generational turn that comes from learning that things can be done differently and better, and that freedom is truly a birthright. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, Dr. Doran Markle of Israel's Water Authority, will explain how Israel has reversed the course of water distribution in the country to compensate for global climate change, how it's addressing the water needs of its citizens and the citizens of its neighboring Arab countries as well, when we return here on Too Jewish. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high school, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Shalom Lamb, a developer and son of one of modern Orthodoxy's most prominent rabbis, pled guilty last week in federal court in White Plains, New York, to a single felony count of conspiracy to corrupt the electoral process. The charge, which stems from Lamb's 2014 effort to sign up ineligible voters and elect a more friendly village government in the small upstate area of Bloomingburg, carries a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison. It's not clear what Lamb's guilty plea will mean for his project in Bloomingburg, where construction is ongoing and where new residents continue to move in. Local opponents of development made voter fraud allegations for years, but had to wait for federal officials to act. The developers, while they pled guilty, are still active and are hurting our community, said Bill Herman, a supervisor of the town of Mamikating, which encompasses Bloomingburg. Lamb and his co-defendants are still building and developing projects based upon zoning approvals whose foundations are built on lies. We need to stop this. Lamb cast himself and his project as victims of anti-Semitism, even while he was in the process of conspiring to corrupt village elections. If you're a conspiracy theorist and you think the Jews control things and are pulling puppet strings, then this all looks like grand conspiracy, Lamb said in February 2014. It's basic anti-Semitism. You would have to be a believer in the protocols of the Elders of Zion to think we would actually manipulate the world this way. It's a complete absurdity. Well, no. That very month, Lamb was working to get around opponents in the village government by enrolling ineligible voters to vote in village elections, according to the indictment filed against him last December. He and others created fake backdated leases to make it look as though new voters lived in the village. They even put toothbrushes in these purported homes to make them look like they were occupied. They also offered payments and subsidies to potential ineligible voters to induce them to file illegal registrations and vote. As he has now admitted, Shalom Lamb conspired to advance his real estate development project by corrupting the democratic process, specifically by falsely registering voters, acting Manhattan U.S. Attorney Jun Kim said. The integrity of our electoral process must be inviolate at every level. Our democracy depends on it. One idly wonders if President Donald Trump and his advisors, who worked so closely with Russians on the recent presidential election, are aware of these principles. Holly Roach, founder of a local anti-development group near Bloomingburg called the Rural Community Coalition, said she expected more from federal investigators. "I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop," she said. "I'm waiting for more." As recently as December, Lamb seemed to be winning a victory in Bloomingburg. Members of the Satmar Hasidic community, with the blessing of the Hasidic group's spiritual leader, Grand Rabbi Zalman Leib Teitelbaum, moved into Lamb's Bloomingburg development in large numbers. There was a kosher grocery store and a makeshift shul. A Satmar school for boys, a cheder, was nearly ready to open. The development had been the target of fierce local opposition since 2012, in part because Lamb hid his intention to build dense housing in the village for Orthodox families. Locals had thought that he was building a golf course community, but instead he built Chestnut Ridge, a tightly packed set of 396 single-family homes just outside of Bloomingburg's tiny downtown. Secret documents revealed in court in 2016 showed Lamb eventually planned to build over 5,000 housing units in the village. He apologized at his court hearing when he pled guilty to the single felony count. He said that the plan began as a voter registration drive undertaken in response to anti-Hasidic bias. Lamb's co-defendant, Kenneth Nachdimmon, pled guilty last month. He cut a deal with prosecutors for a reduced sentence, but Lamb did not. Lamb's sentencing will be in September. He is the son of Rabbi Norman Lamb, a revered modern Orthodox leader, the longtime chancellor of Yeshiva University. "Although this happened, we look for a bright future with our neighbors in the Bloomingburg area," said a local resident named Moshe Meisels, a chassid. "We also hope that this conviction might stop all the hatred that's been going on until now." In other news, police in Manchester, England, say that the arson attacks on two kosher restaurants there were anti-Semitic hate crimes. The attacks, which police believe were linked, took place in the North Manchester neighborhood of Prestwich within 5 days of each other last week. A week ago, Friday night, two people threw a firebomb at the Ta'am restaurant in Manchester. The attack was caught on surveillance cameras. The bomb didn't ignite. Led one of the attackers to throw a rock through the establishment's front window. Early the following Tuesday, attackers forced open a window at the JS restaurant and poured in flammable liquid, which they lit. The fire was put out after an hour, causing no serious damage. Manchester, England, of course, was the scene of the horrific terror attack on an Ariana Grande concert that killed 22 people, mostly young, and the benefit concert for the victims that she staged with an all-star roster of musicians shortly thereafter. There is no known connection between the concert attack and the anti-Semitic attacks in Manchester. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Dr. Doron Markle, who's an expert on Israel's water. He's with Israel's Water Authority and is entrusted with a great deal of the care of the Sea of Galilee, which we were hearing about. The beautiful Kinneret is now at a very seriously low level and probably needs to get water back from some of those desalination plants. Is there a plan to do that?
Yeah. There is a plan to do that, although it will take some time. But yeah, the Water Authority has a reaction plan to the climate change crisis, and our plan is built of different terms. Now, on the short term, we've got mainly drills that we're going to drill more and bring more groundwater to the basin. But on the long term, we plan to discharge water from the national system, namely desalinated water, through the national water carrier, but northward rather than southward, towards Lake Inneret. And I assume that in about 5 years from today, we're going to have 40 to 50, maybe even more million cubic meters of water, of desalinated water, discharged either into Lake Inneret or to the basin of Lake Inneret, having the farmers use this water and release a natural water to flow downstream towards Lake Inneret.
You know, it's a fascinating thing how much Israel's history is closely tied up with water and water management, ranging from draining swamps and now refilling them for shorebirds to using the water of the Kinneret to irrigate Israel and now having to restore the Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee. There's another sea that's had serious problems, the Dead Sea, in part because so much of the water from the Sea of Galilee was used, and then partly because of climate change. There's been a couple of plans discussed to bring water back into the Dead Sea, which has been disappearing. Where do things sit now with the Red Dead Canal or pipeline, or where are things going now?
First of all, there are some people that think that we could open the dam at the southern end of Lake Inneret, the Sea of Galilee, and just let the water flow downstream towards the lower Jordan River and to the Dead Sea, and everything will be all right. Now, this is unreasonable, and according to the current situation, the hydrological situation of Lake Inneret, we have nothing, almost nothing, to discharge downstream towards the lower Jordan. So the Dead Sea, which declines in a rate of 1 meter per year every year, needs about 750 million cubic meters per year every year to be stabilized. Now, such a huge amount of water you cannot bring from our freshwater sources. And we understood few years ago that the only source that you could bring to the Dead Sea is rather seawater or brine of desalination plants. Now the Red Sea Dead Sea project is about to desalinate the water of the Red Sea, the Gulf of Eilat, Aqaba, and discharge the brine plus some seawater through a pipe all the way through the Arava Valley and discharged it into the Dead Sea. And that project is really going to be executed. And we are now at the stage of bidding process. And in 1 year, the construction will start. And in 4 to 5 years, let's say the year 2022, you'll have water that getting into the Dead Sea from south, not from north. Another artificial huge project, which is needed. It is needed because the water that used to flow into the Dead Sea 100 years ago are being used now for drinking. You know, we don't take this water, fresh water, and just discharge it into the Mediterranean Sea. We drink it, and it's not only Israel. Please remember, it's also Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and the Palestinian Authority. Everybody drinks this water. And put on that, the climate change and the decrease in natural precipitation. That's where you get to the fact that the Dead Sea declines in more than 1 meter per year. So the reclaiming of the Dead Sea will be from south and by seawater plus the brine of desalination plants.
So really, it's a second reversal. You know, taking water and putting it back into the Kinneret from the desalination plants, and taking water from the south, from the Red Sea, and within 4 or 5 years, beginning to recharge or at least stabilize the Dead Sea itself.
That's true. That's true. But let's remember that the Red Sea Dead Sea project is not only about bringing water to the Dead Sea. It's also about desalinating seawater and supply it to people in the Mediterranean.
Sure.
So you have to remember that our Middle East area is a sort of a very dry area, and number of people increasing all the time. And Jordan, for example, the Kingdom of Jordan, they need a lot of water. They get refugees from Syria, and they need more and more water for drinking. So this new desalination plants will supply drinking water. First of all, it will supply drinking water for the Kingdom of Jordan. And we are going to use the brine, because once you desalinate a cubic meter of seawater, you have 40% is the drinking water, and 60% is a brine. So it's a very good idea to use a brine in order to stabilize the Dead Sea.
Is the brine the right saline content for the Dead Sea? Dead Sea is a tremendous level of salt, right?
Right. The salinity of the Dead Sea is 10 times regular seawater. Now, brine of desalination plant is usually twice seawater. So the Dead Sea is still 5 times more saline than the brine. Okay? But look, we had this very long and intensive feasibility study for the Red Sea-Dead Sea project led by the World Bank. And the bottom line was that it is possible to discharge brine or seawater into the Dead Sea without harming the Dead Sea. And the full project speaks about 700 or even 800 million cubic meters of seawater or brine every year. However, the first stage, which is going to be constructed in 4 to 5 years, speaks about 250 million cubic meters per year. So it's only the first stage. We'll execute it and learn more about the processes in the Dead Sea, and then decide how to continue.
The north of Israel still is very heavily agricultural. The water for that has long come from the Kinneret and its watershed. Is the water from desalination plants going to be used now for the agricultural usage, industrial usage in the north?
It's a very good question. Look, yeah, the basin, the watershed of Lake Kinneret is full of agriculture, and about 160 up to 200 million cubic meters per year is consumed for farming in this watershed. Part of it in Lebanon. Let's remember that 25% of the watershed is in Lebanon and not in Israel. And so this water is being consumed for farming, and it decreases the water inflow into Lake Kinneret. Now, one of our steps that we are taking right now is to allocate and limiting the allocation to water supplies to farmers. That's a very difficult step, and because we want to keep the farming, but in order to keep the lake as a strategic water resource, we must limit the consumption for agriculture in the watershed. However, according to our long-term plan, desalinated water will reach the watershed, the basin, and let farmers use it, let's say in 5 years from now, and they will release the natural water to flow downstream to Lake Kinneret. So you'll have both of them. You'll be able to keep the farming in the watershed and keep the and preserve the Lake Kinneret as a strategic water resource for the benefit of the state of Israel. And if I could just elaborate a little bit more about why do we want to keep the Kinneret as a strategic water resource? Could I?
Sure.
Well, there is a legitimate question of do we need to keep it as a strategic water resource in the era of desalination? And we thought about it a lot and decided that yes, it should be preserved and kept as a strategic water resource. And there are a few reasons for that. And one is the fact that the desalination plants are very vulnerable. And, you know, I don't want to give any idea to anybody, but, you know, we must take into consideration any scenario. And the scenario of problems, technical problems in one or two out of our five desalination plants means that a city like a city of Haifa with 400,000 people will have no water at the taps. And Israel as a state cannot agree to a situation like that. And Lake Kinneret is the main and actually the only water resource which by pushing one button you can supply and discharge water to Haifa, Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, almost Israel. And that's one very good reason to keep the Kinneret as a water resource. The other reason is our agreements with the Kingdom of Jordan. Since 1994, the peace agreement with Jordan, we agreed to supply about 50 million cubic meters per year to the Kingdom of Jordan, mainly from Lake Kinneret. And we must stand in this agreement, no matter the climate is. And more than that, in 2015, Israel and Jordan signed a new agreement speaking about future excess supply from Lake Kinneret to Jordan. So we should be ready to supply another 50 million from Lake Kinneret to Jordan. That's another very good reason to keep Lake Kinneret as a strategic water resource.
Well, it's a wonderful view on the whole situation and the aspect of international cooperation between Israel and Arabs that has transcended all of the challenges in the region. I want to thank Dr. Doron Markle for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Have a chance to hear him at Temple Emmanuel this coming Friday night. And where can people go to find out more about the water situation in Israel more generally?
Was it a question for me?
Yeah, it's a question for you. What's the best website to find out more about Israeli water issues?
Okay. We have the website of the Water Authority, but I'm not sure you can find a lot of material in English on that website. And actually, I'm not sure that there is a good website in English.
So maybe that's your next...
To read a lot about the water problems or issues in Israel.
In
but
Israel,
you know what?
Yeah.
You gave me a good idea. That's something that should be changed.
All right. It's your next project. Thank you so much, Doron.
You're welcome.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Jeffrey Konis, author of the new book, The Conversations We Never Had. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website and friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from Cantor Netanel Hershtick and the Maccabees, their version of Havdalah, the ceremony for the end of Shabbat, from their Join the World in Making Havdalah recording. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Hine kel yeshuati Evtach velo efchad Ki azri
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.